The recordings are started.
Thank you, Bob. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the EPDP drafting team meeting on the 5th of July, 2018. On the call today, we have Heather Forrest, Rafiq Damak, Donna Austin, Aidan Federline, Susan Karaguchi, Pam Little, Yulf Helsingius, Stephanie Perrin, Rubens Kuhl, Paul McGrady, Darcy Sutherwell, Marie Petullo, Arsene Tungali, and Keith Drazik. We've received apologies from Nikhaili Nalan, Tatiana Trapina, Philippe Foucault, and Carlos Gutierrez, who might try to join us later. From staff, we have Marika Koenig, Barry Cobb, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please remember to state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Heather.
Thanks, Natalie, very much. Hello to everyone. I hope you've had safe travels back home, or if you're still en route, that travels are going well. We are back together not as council, but as the EPDP drafting team, and we have a number of documents that we're working in live. As you will see, the way that we've set up the AC pod is that the notes pod on the far right has links to all of those Google Docs where the comments and issues have been captured. You'll notice the remark there that the latest version of the charter is still unchanged as of when we left it in Panama City. And we've got each of those individual Google Docs down the screen there. The first one in the list, we're just taking them in list order, no real strategy here, is scope. And so the document that we have in front of us is in relation to scope. And now, Marika, is there anything we need to say about this document? It appears to me that it contains the comments, so it looks like it has everything we need. But if there's anything to be said, Marika, you can tell us.
Thanks, Heather. So what you can see, indeed, that there have been some specific edits and suggestions made in the current language, and I think a number of those suggestions came from, I think, Pam, Darcy, Aidan, I think, were the main commenters. But then there are also general comments that were made, which can be found in the comments suggestion section of the document. You can see that there's a specific thread that basically captures the conversation that I think happened in the last 2 days between Susan Rubens and Stephanie, and mainly. I do know that Paul, and I see Paul's hand up, so I'm sure he'll explain that as well, that Paul has also sent some comments to the list, but they came in too late to include them here, so hopefully he can speak to those comments.
Thanks, Marika. That's helpful. Paul, over to you.
Thanks. Apologies, everybody. I sent in comments on Monday, and I thought the staff was capturing them in these documents. But it turns out that's not the work process. I must have just got that completely backwards from Panama. So my question is, should I go through and try to frantically edit these before we get to work here, or are we better off with me just attempting to work in the language as we go?
Hey, thanks, Paul. It's Heather. I wonder if the best thing to do would be to speak to your comments here rather than, I'm just afraid if you're frantically working in the background, then we kind of lose the value of you on the call. So before we have you go through your comments, Paul, is there anybody else in Paul's situation that they have comments that are not captured in this document that they'd like to speak to? All right, I don't see any hands. So, Paul, I think that suggests that your comments are the ones that need to be read in, so to speak. And this is a PDF, so we can't really edit these documents live. The challenge of working with the Google Docs is they don't really show on the AC screen unless we're all set up for a formal meeting, and it's hard to capture the comments. So we've had to PDF them. So these are static, so we're not able to make changes on the fly. But, Paul, with that in mind, are you able to switch screens, let's say, and can you read in some of your key points here?
Yeah, I'll get started setting up a second computer so that I'm able to work on two screens. Just be a minute.
Cool. Thanks, Paul. So while Paul does that, we have comments that have made it in here. I understand there's been a fair bit of dialogue between, let's say, some of the members of the NCSG, and I think Keith has weighed in on some of these points. Would anyone like to, I mean, I can give my summary of where I think we are in scope, but the folks who've had the dialogue most, would anyone like to speak to where they think we are or summarize their position in relation to scope? Keith, go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much, Heather, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. So I think as it relates to scope, just at a high level, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page here, you know, and then we can dig into the actual substance of the text. But I think there's a recognition that this EPDP needs to be very, very focused in its initial phases, or initial phase in the initial couple of months, on the temporary specification. And the temporary specification alone. We have essentially 8 weeks once this EPDP working group gets kicked off, you know, 8 or 9 weeks, to develop an initial report by Barcelona, which will put us on a time frame to conclude the EPDP work on the temporary specification by May of next year, which is the deadline for the temporary specification specifically. And then I think it's also important to understand and recognize that the work on the access model is also very urgent and important, but that it cannot be done within the 8 or 9 weeks that we've got to focus on the temporary specification. And importantly, the temporary specification-focused work will actually inform the work of the access and accreditation discussion. In fact, there are some gating issues in the temporary specification that must be resolved, specifically around, you know, who gets access and for what purpose, that will inform and determine the work of the access and accreditation piece. And so at a high level, the structure, the proposed structure of this EPDP is to have a very focused set of work on the temporary specification heading into Barcelona. And then once the initial report on the temporary specification is complete, the focus of the work will turn then to access and accreditation. So at the time the initial report on the temp spec is posted, published, then there's an expectation that we will transition the group, the group will pivot then to start working on the access and accreditation piece as informed by the work of the temporary spec working group. So I just want to set out that that at a high level is, I think, where we are, a recognition that the temp spec and the accreditation and access are parts of this process, but they need to be staggered for the reasons I've described. So that is, I think, where we are today, at least in our conversations, and I want to make sure that the language in the scope piece of the charter reflects that, and happy to take any questions or any, you know, further comment and thought. Thanks.
Thanks, Keith. We have Susan and then Paul. Susan.
Thanks, Heather. Susan, Kawaguchi for the record. I agree with most of what Keith has said. The BC does not agree that accreditation should be part of the EPDP, that for the most part, accreditation is going to be handled both sides, ICANN's remit, and the work will be fairly limited on accreditation. Yes, there'll be bonus. I think this EPDP has to concern itself with it. I do that access is key. The BC understands that we have a very short time frame, and we are willing to work hard and in that goal of Barcelona. But I don't think we should deliberately limit or put a false deadline in on the work on access. The access, I agree, there are gating questions that will inform the access work, but the access work might be able to be done along and hit the deadline Barcelona. And I think we should leave that flexibility and not limit the work discussion of the EPDP based on a perceived notion that we can't get the work done. I think we should attempt to do it, see where we are in 4 weeks after this work has started. And the working group really, no matter what would in this scope of this charter, the working group really is going to take the timeline and the importance of elements of the scope. And so we need to leave that work to them to decide in some ways. But BC does not agree that the accreditation piece should be in the scope.
Thanks, Susan. Paul.
Thanks. So Paul McGrady here. I'm a little concerned that my inability to get the IPC comments into the 5 or 10 various documents that were flying around may have given the misimpression that we are where Keith thinks we are. I don't think we have moved on our position since Panama, which is, the issue of access remains in scope because it's in the temporary specification. So maybe we can have a little more clarity from Keith about what he's talking about in terms of what he thinks is out of scope and what can't get done before Barcelona, but there's no way to read the temporary specification without dealing with the fact that there is process or there is a discussion of appropriate access to who is data. So Keith, can we maybe have some more detail from you? Because I'd love to agree with you if I can. I just don't know that we're saying the same thing.
So, Keith, you responded in the chat. Are you willing to say a few words? And I will remind everyone that we are audiocast, but we are the only ones on the Adobe. So if we want anything to be, let's say, formally heard, we need to speak up.
Thanks, Heather. This is Keith Drazik. And absolutely, as I typed into Adobe chat, as we've said many times and multiple times, everything in the temp spec is in scope for this group, everything. And to the extent that there are things in the annex, those are largely to be considered in my proposed or our proposed phase two of the work that ideally would kick off in Barcelona with the publication of the initial report from the temp spec. So I don't know how I can be any more clear than that. It's what I've said multiple times in multiple conversations from Panama and onwards, is that everything in the temporary specification is necessarily in scope. We have to either confirm, reject, or amend the temporary specification by May of next year, or it goes away. And essentially there's at that point no obligation on contracted parties to do anything regarding what's in the temp spec. So we have to focus on that, make sure the initial report gets posted by Barcelona. The work of that, and including the Section 4 language around access, has to be considered by the working group focused on the temp spec. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Keith, very much. Paul, your hand is up. Do you want to follow up?
Not yet. I apologize, but I'm still trying to figure out how to get two screens going here. So I guess I'm hearing everything that's in the temporary specifications on the table, including access issues found in Section 4. But then I also heard the opening argument that we were all in agreement that access should not be included. So I guess I'm just not following what Keith is attempting to get us all to agree to as an opening issue. So I guess I just won't agree to it since I don't understand it, and we'll just deal with it, line by line as we go. Thanks.
Okay, Paul, thanks. So while Paul works on getting his other screen up, what I think we could usefully do here is work our way through the text and see where we are. We've given a high-level introduction, and I'm not hearing that everybody's on board with the high-level introduction, so maybe we can find our way through this by way of the actual text. So Aidan agrees, better to go through line by line. So, perfect. Our first paragraph says, this EPDP team is being charged to determine if temporary specification for GTLD registration data in whole or in part should become an ICANN consensus policy. As part of its determination, the EPDP team is at a minimum expected to consider the following elements of the temp spec and answer the following charter questions. Everyone happy with the first paragraph, including the addition of in whole or in part? Eden's got a tick. Donna has her hand up. Paul has his hand up. Donna.
Sorry, Heather, Donna Austin. So I guess I'm concerned about going through this line by line, understanding that I've seen the changes that Paul has proposed and they're not included in this. And I think some of the suggestions by Susan would change some of the language in this. So I'd like to understand, because my concern is I don't know that we can agree to this line by line because we haven't. It doesn't include comments that have been received and suggesting changes. So I'm just wondering, from a practical perspective, how we do this, because even if we agree to what's up here now, we know that there's comments out there that are outstanding.
Yeah, fair point, Donna. Thank you. Paul.
So, I'm still trying to get my second screen up here, but I'm happy to walk through the line-by-line proposed changes that I sent around, if that would be helpful. What's the process here? I've obviously not understood the process from the beginning. I see that some comments back and forth on the list were being captured by staff in this document. My comments that were sent in by email weren't, which is fine, totally my fault for not understanding the process. How do we best do this?
Paul, it's Heather. So I can well appreciate, we had lots of moving parts here. I think the one thing that we need to make more clear in the future is the one thing we said we found very hard to deal with was red lines, simply because it then means we've got to merge. If we each submitted a red line, we'd have 21 red lines, and it wouldn't be possible to merge them. So staff have been capturing comments, but they've been sort of comments on the fly as opposed to markups, because it was going to bury staff if they had to work with a number of different markups. So that's it, that's all of the, let's say that's the summary of process. And as Marika notes in the chat, as some of the comments are diametrically opposed, it's difficult to integrate into one version. So we've been sort of capturing summaries of where we are. And I think that's why it was helpful to start with the high-level summary or introduction to this that Keith gave, but I can see that we're not all necessarily clear on the high-level summary. To Ruben's point put in the chat, I think it's an excellent one. I think we are going to have to define temporary specification, because any use of the term temporary specification seems to enliven some of these scope concerns. I suppose, Paul, with the red line, I think a number of the comments that have been received to now have been high level in principle, as opposed to changing the text, wordsmithing, which is why I was maybe thinking we could read your comments in. But if it's not possible to read your comments in, and we might not be at the point, as Don has just noted, we might not be at the point of a line-by-line. I mean, eventually we're going to have to go through a line-by-line agreement, but it might be that we have to do that on our own or come again in another call. Paul, do you want to tell us the general gist of your comments? Because I think at the moment we're dancing in shadows.
Yeah, so this is, I guess I think we, unfortunately, will have to go line by line. I think we were going to have to go line by line anyways, no matter what. So I don't see any downside in doing that. With the mission and scope paragraph, there were a couple of changes. At the end of the first sentence, at the end of policy, the IPC proposed to add in, and everybody can see these on the comments I sent around, as is or with modifications, comma, in accordance with the mandate to collect data set forth in ICANN's bylaws and the related principles of ensuring continued availability of the WHOIS service to the greatest extent possible and other processing of GTLD registration data while complying with the GDPR and avoiding fragmentation of WHOIS. So that's fairly straightforward. Basically, it's accepting three principles at the same time, which is the collection of data, continued availability of WHOIS service to the greatest extent possible, and processing of the GTLD registration data, all the while complying with GDPR and hopefully avoiding fragmentation of WHOIS. So, I mean, I don't think that that's controversial. I think everybody, first of all, wants to comply with the GDPR and would like for the WHOIS to otherwise function in the way that it has for years, except to the extent necessary for it to be modified to comply with GDPR, all with the goal of avoiding fragmentation of how WHOIS data is collected, processed, and accessed. So that's sort of that's a contained comment, but several principles wrapped up in there. The other change was at the end, the EPDP team shall consider the impact of its responses to these questions on any existing consensus policies, which shall be preserved in accordance with the principle above. In other words, when the EPDP team does its work, it has to keep in mind other consensus policies, and essentially there's a principle here of conservation, that the things that the EPDP team comes up with should have a minimal consequence on the footprint of all of ICANN's other consensus policies as possible. So on the mission and scope introductory paragraph, those are essentially the changes we propose, and they're tied to some basic principles, none of which I think are terribly controversial. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. So I think you have a fair bit of text there, and it would be helpful for that to be seen. What I propose is this. I think Donna had a good idea some time ago in the chat. I wonder if it would make sense, Paul, if we talk about it in principle now, because I'm not sure. We've got some comments in the chat that don't suggest that that's universally agreed. Let's say those two points. If we talk at a high level about those now, and then perhaps we get Paul, yourself, and Keith, and maybe Susan, and so Stephanie and Aiden were the first ones to make comments on your language. I wonder if we get you guys to put your heads together after this call and see if we can't get to some common agreement there on precise language. But Stephanie and Aiden, you've made comments in the chat. Anything you want to speak about that we could then sort of hash out in principle on this? All right, so I don't see any hands up.
Sorry, Donna. It's Stephanie. Can you hear me?
Yes, Stephanie. Go right ahead.
I'll just repeat what I said in the chat, that this business about fragmentation, I mean, first of all, WHOIS is fragmented. Secondly, compliance with law demands fragmentation. So avoiding fragmentation is something I don't think we should set ourselves up for further argument about that matter. We've already said that we're going to attempt to maintain access to who is. That says it all. You don't need to get down into how we're going to do it.
Thanks, Stephanie. So, Keith, thanks very much for your comment in the chat that you're happy to work further on fine-tuning. Keith, Paul, you're obvious folks to put your heads together. Would anyone else, I think ideally perhaps somebody from NCSG and maybe Susan, I don't know if you want to join this too, or do we want to just let Paul and Susan's happy to help, okay? And Stephanie and Keith are typing. Stephanie, okay, good stuff. So that, let's record that. We've got it in the sidebar, in the notes. Paul, Susan, Keith, and Stephanie will work together on this IPC language. Paul, are you happy with that? Paul's happy. Cool. All right. Now, in terms of what that gives us, Paul, just for clarity, the inputs that you gave us, that really went to the opening paragraph. Did you have edits as well to each of the charter questions?
There'll be edits on down the line. So, I'm not sure what the best process there is other than to bring them up as we go.
I would suggest, I think, Paul, that you guys do that in the small team in the first instance, if everyone's comfortable with that, because I think it's going to get challenging to work through reading in, you know, detailed comments. I think it'd probably be most efficient if you guys took a stab at it in the small group, if you're willing for that to happen.
Thanks, Heather. I guess that's fine. My only concern is that at minimum, we're allowed to introduce concepts on this call.
Paul, that makes sense. The one thing, so Keith also has some suggested edits and accounting of all the inputs received so far. So I think that's a good idea. I'm also mindful of the time. We're 30 minutes into our two-hour call. We're on scope. If you scroll to the bottom of the document that you see in the main pod, you'll see that there are inputs received that aren't directly in line into the document are all captured in that bottom half of the document, starting with Stephanie's comment from the 28th of June. If anyone notices that they're missing something, so Paul, let's handle that first. If anyone thinks that, so Keith, you raised this point, if anyone thinks that they have comments that haven't been captured here, then we need to make sure that this document is up to date. Does anyone have concerns about something missing?
So, hi, Heather. Paul again. I'm sorry to be the problem child. Paul here again. So, can I just say blanketly that there are, you know, there are various things that the IPC suggested on Monday that are not here, and leave it at that, and then that work goes to the small group offline so that I shouldn't worry about it, because what I don't want to happen is that we, you know, essentially on the next call or whatever, that, you know, everybody says, well, we had agreement on the text that was here because the IPC comments got sent off to a small group and weren't heard by the larger group. I'm happy to, because this is my screw up, I should have done some other process. Is it sufficient for me to remain silent knowing that the small group will look at all the IPC comments? Is that what we should do for speed?
Thanks, Paul. Look, I think, and I'll turn to Marika in a second here. No need to stress. I mean, I think what, the IPC comments we know are there, Paul. I think what I'm trying to capture is there anything else that's missing from this document? Because staff, staff are working with a moving target too. So I think we all need to take a deep breath here, frankly. There's no, there's no need to panic. We've had, you know, a long, hard week in Panama. We made excellent progress. It's natural that some things were going to get missed and as everybody gets back home and everything else. And I'm about to, you know, as we hang up this call, I'm about to start my 40-hour trip home. So, you know, let's just take stock of where we are and see what's missing. I think that's what we need to do. Marika, your suggestion. Over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Heather. This is Marika. So my suggestion would be that everyone, as soon as we get off this call, goes to the Google Doc and reviews whether you know their comments that have been submitted to date are in there or those that indicated that there are further comments they would like to submit. I know I think Keith suggested he has additional input he wants to provide. As we noted, the IPC input is not in there yet. So if you're able to incorporate that, and as noted before, the most helpful way of doing it at this stage would be to insert it in the comments and suggestions section and ideally kind of, you know, describe in general terms what kind of changes you would like to see. As at this stage, it's difficult to manage specific red lines, especially if they go to issues that, you know, are obviously controversial. That may then help the small group that has been tasked with looking at this input to take all this input and hopefully come up with a version that is acceptable to most, if not all. So that may be the best way of working. Then the question is, of course, you know, once, you know, hopefully everyone can do that within the next couple of hours after the call, what would be the easiest for the small group to come together? And as I said, you know, staff is happy to assist there as needed. You know, if a doodle is needed to find a time to meet, we can do that. You know, we can create another kind of Google Doc space where, you know, people can start making suggestions. Whatever is easiest for you to work. And then I also asked the question in the chat, it probably would be helpful to have a kind of deadline by which time or which date the group is expected to come back to the bigger drafting team, because of course at the end of the day, you know, the whole group probably will want to have a look at this and provide their input on, you know, whatever the group hopefully comes up with as a kind of compromise between the different positions that have been expressed.
Thanks, Marika. That's helpful. I think my comment to that would be, let's try not to increase the number of Google Docs. You know, when you suggest another Google Doc space, I would be careful with that because we're already managing a fair few. I think we're in a good workable position now. Paul, your hand is up. It might be perpetually up.
Apologies. I promise this will be my last comment on that. So I will just respond on principles rather than on text. We're happy to have the small group look over the IPC proposed changes. And lastly, just for clarity, the screw-up is 100% mine, not staff's. I just didn't understand the process. And so I thank the staff and everybody else in this call for their indulgence of me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No worries, Paul. All right, look, I think what we need to do is this. The importance of the exercise is it's clear that the IPC comments are missing and need to be added in. What's not necessarily clear but is a possibility is that there may be some other comments that are missing in this document. What I would suggest that we do as a way forward is, and again, we're still only on scope and we have a fair few more documents to go through, I would suggest that everyone take the opportunity after this call to have a look at this Google Doc, not the static PDF document. We've just had to take the snapshot immediately prior to this call. So you have the Google Doc links all on the side, and I think I might ask staff to do it again. Staff, I know you've done it 100 times, but if you can put in the top of our inboxes this list of Google Doc links. Let's then, after this call, each of us take a moment to review, start with scope. Take a moment to review. If you think that a comment of yours is missing from that document, add it in. We'll try and do that in the next, say, 24, 48 hours or so. And then the small team will get to work. Now, small team, would you like, so the small team, as a reminder, is Paul, Keith, Stephanie, and Susan. Would you guys like for staff to run a doodle for you? Stephanie and Paul are typing. Okay, cool. Thank you. Stephanie and Paul, please do. Fabulous. Okay. Natalie, if I could trouble you to run a doodle for those guys, that would be brilliant. And give them a little bit of lag time for any further comments to be pumped into that Google Doc. All right. With that, it seems that we still have a fair bit of work to do on scope, which is not surprising because it's the one that gave us the most discussion in Panama. What I would suggest that we do is turn to the next document in our list, which is membership criteria. And before, let's say, so staff are super prompt on switching documents, before we do that, does anyone object to moving on to membership criteria? Nobody's screaming. Okay. All right, so let's look at membership criteria. That takes us to a new Google Doc. Amrika, I think that makes good sense. Doodle for starting early next week so that everyone can provide their input into that document. I think that makes good sense. Okay, so you see the document's the same sort of format. Again, this is ripped from a Google Doc. It's just a static PDF. We can't edit this one on the fly. I think the first thing we ought to do here is ask, Paul, does the IPC have inputs on this one that we need to then work into the document?
Thanks, Heather. Yeah, I don't see any red lines in the IPC. Thanks.
Great. So that's a good starting point. You note that this document is set up the very same way. We've got the charter text, and then we have what follows that is a number of suggestions or general comments that have gone in here. Some of them go to specific points. Some of them are more high level. On this one, it appears to me that we would be in a position to go line by line. Does that sound sensible? And we've got a fairly short text here. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that Donna has actually suggested a kind of complete replacement of the original text, which you can find in the common suggestion section. So you may first want to look at that and see whether that is an acceptable approach. And if not, then you maybe want to go back to line by line. And as noted as well, some of the comments and suggestions also have made suggestions to the existing text that are not captured as red lines, but just captured as comments here.
Thanks, Marika. That's helpful. Donna, would you like to speak to your comments? I mean, we can see them on the screen at the bottom of those, the high-level inputs, but it might be that it's helpful to have the context for your thinking.
Yeah, thanks, Heather. Donna Austin. So all I've tried to do is combine the concepts, I suppose, that we're trying to capture in the original text and just make it a little bit simpler. The only thing that I would note is there's a question in here about the commit to abide by an EPDP team commitment statement. So that is something that we've been working on offline, and Marika, I'm not sure whether that's been shared with the group or not. And that's something that that commitment to that is not reflected in my suggested rewrite. So that should be. So that's the only. That's kind of the background. So I'm just trying to make it easier, or simpler. And we need to add in that commitment to the participation statement, or whatever we end up calling it.
Thanks, Donna. And I think in addition to simpler, let's say, as I understand your opening line in the comments there, you worry that the current language might be a bit too narrow. Is that right?
It's not too narrow, Heather, it's too prescriptive. So I think what we've acknowledged during the conversations that we've had around this is that each stakeholder group is going to appoint their own representatives using their own method and, you know, approach. So we can't be too prescriptive in this about what the requirements of the membership should be. So I'm just trying to expand, not make it so prescriptive.
Understood. Thanks, Donna. That's helpful. Eden, over to you.
Thanks, Heather. This is Eden. I agree with what Donna has proposed, actually. I think that that language will work very well. One comment or suggestion that I had was, so the final bullet point is saying that participants need to be able to contribute, including during the face-to-face meetings. So perhaps we would want to tentatively schedule or put forward the dates for when these meetings might be, so that potential participants are able to assess whether or not they will actually be available. And at least for our stakeholder group, where some participants may need to acquire a visa, depending on the location of the meeting, that could be an important consideration before they would be able to put their name forward. But aside from that, I think that language is great. And I could certainly live with everything that Donna has proposed there. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Eden. And just to clarify, Eden, because I think Paul's picked up, you know, a similar point, are you referring to the face-to-face, Eden?
This is Eden. Yes, that's correct. And I think that Paul is right, and also the location would be important to know. Not necessarily in this document itself, but when we are putting out the call, I think that is important background information that people should have.
General understanding. Yeah, I appreciate that, Aidan. So I think what we need to do is we need to plan on, exactly as Marika says, we're at a slightly difficult point here in the sense of, org will certainly work with the composition of the team, those individual members, to determine the most cost-effective location. I think we can anticipate from our own experience in the strategic planning session that we held in January, that was held in LA for cost efficiency purposes. We had, the benefit of having ICANN headquarters close by, and based on the numbers of this group, I would anticipate that it's possible that the group could fit into ICANN offices in the main meeting room. And that being the case, that's always going to be the most cost-effective solution for something like this. So I think, to a certain degree, it's a chicken and egg thing. I think we also need to have in mind that LA is at least a likely candidate, given that it's a cost-effective candidate. So I think it'll be very difficult for us to go out with the call for volunteers and say the meeting will be held here, because that almost puts the cart before the horse. That makes the venue determine the volunteers, as opposed to the volunteers determining the venue. So Susan, over to you.
Thanks, Heather. So I just have a comment on the fourth bullet. I'm a little bit concerned with the word tenant required to work. I like the idea that Donna is attempting to get at here, but I'm not sure how you would define temperament and then actually utilize this language in selecting candidates. So maybe we drop the temperament, required in good faith toward consensus solution during the life of the EPDB, and my eyes this early in the morning for me, or is there a typo, though? And should that be treat other members of the team respect? So that would just be an edit I think we should change.
Thanks, Susan. Hopefully I'm not cutting you off. Your audio was a bit scratchy at the end. And I think we have found a few typos there, so we can clean those up. And I think Donna's put in some just slightly modified language about, oh, and it just went away. It moved above the box. Be willing to work in good faith towards consensus. So I think we're getting down to sort of brass tacks on the language there. So I hear Susan's comments as saying there's support for this. but for the few things that we're tweaking here, and Susan's typing, so she'll tell me if I'm wrong. Susan says, thanks, Donna, that's great. Is there anyone, so if we shift our focus to Donna's proposed five dot points here, and we'll pick up the typos, is there anyone that has issues with these points as articulated by Donna? So I see Donna's points as having re-articulated in a clearer and more concise fashion the points above. Is there anything missing from Donna's points in your view? Donna,
Heather,
over to you.
Donna.
Yeah,
sorry. So as I said, the only thing that needs to be put in here is that, you know, agreement to abide by the EPDP team. I think Rafiq and I have termed it statement of participation, and that has not been shared with the group, so that needs to be circulated to the group as well and agreed. Again, if I can just talk to the statement of participation, this is really just something that we spoke about in PDP 3.0 something that would be an agreement from the participant that, you know, they agreed to abide by these certain things, but the important thing is they understand that if they don't, the chair has the authority to you know, remove them is the wrong word, but to limit their participation or something. So there's a, you know, I agree to do this and I understand the consequences is, and it's just five or six dot points. Thanks, Heather.
Thanks, Donna. That's helpful. Yeah, at the moment, that's really just an in-principle thing. And you're right, there's a very clear segue to PDP 3.0. Ruben, it's nice to see that you have a sense of humor this far along in the process. Stephanie, over to you, please.
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I certainly agree with the concept of including consensus. I would just like to note that consensus policy with respect to who is for the last 18 years, we have been told that it was not in compliance with the law. So I'm a little worried. I'd just like to note somehow that the GNSO is capable of coming to consensus that they should ignore the law. I give you the who is conflicts with law policy. So is there a way, and I don't have suggested language at the moment, I had put in there a line about understanding the impact of the law upon certain actors in the community. And I do understand, of course, that the registrars and registries have become aware that the law is going to hit them, so they're much less likely to agree to something that is going to result in fines. However, I'd just like to sort of note that history. Thoughts, welcome.
Thanks, Stephanie. It's Heather. I'm going to take a stab at let's say, responding to that, although I confess your point went a different direction than I thought it was going to go. So in terms of the use of the term consensus here, I understand the use of the term consensus here as sort of directing the reader's attention to Section 3.6 of the GNSO PDP Working Group Guidelines, which is all about how consensus is determined and how the group, you know, how we end up sort of capturing the will of the group. Consensus policy and its impact on the law, I think, you know, first of all, what consensus policy is a different thing from that whole process of determining consensus or the will of the group. And then I think, you know, consensus policy and its impact on the law, its relationship to the law is another thing again. I'm not sure, Stephanie, and it might be that I misunderstand, but I'm not sure if we need necessarily a reference to consensus policy and its relationship to the law here in the membership criteria. You know, to suggest, I mean, perhaps what you're suggesting is that any members need to appreciate the impacts of consensus policy and its relationship to the law. I'm afraid that might be a hollow statement in a sense of asking someone to appreciate something might be hard work. So, Stephanie, while I think your point is important, I'm not sure that it's necessarily the right home for it here in membership criteria, but maybe I've misunderstood. So, Stephanie, back to you.
I think that's a fair point, Donna. I just don't want people to point to this and say we're agreeing on consensus here, because yours truly will not deviate from a stated interpretation of the law, and I would hate to be accused of refusing to reach consensus if others have decided they're going to take a risk and try it. Do you follow me? So I think I know I sound like some sort of Puritan here, but I'm prepared to let it rest and see if it has a home in another spot.
Thanks, Stephanie. And just for the record, Stephanie, you've been chatting with Heather. I wonder if there's a value here for so Donna and I, you and I can double. I wonder if there's a value in relation to consensus, making a reference to the working group guidelines, because we have, I think, agreed to adopt those in further down in the charter. So to the point then that we have the reference to consensus. Working good faith towards consensus solutions. Actually, maybe the place to do this is, Donna, I might turn to you. We had something in the earlier text about commitment to the charter. Should we also be asking, or is it not necessary, Donna? Should we be asking about commitment to the working group guidelines? Because that is certainly, or should we just reference 3.6 after the word consensus? How might we pick up on this point about commitment to that sort of stuff?
Hi, Heather. I'm thinking. You know, my concern about, you know, referencing something in the procedures or other documents is that we're not calling out what it is we are trying to address. So I'll have a think about it, and I'll come back during the call to see if there's other language I can come up with.
Thanks, Donna. That's fair. And I think as we progress, because this will all sit, ultimately, all of this stuff will sit in the same document, it'll make much more sense when it's a coherent whole. At the moment, we're dealing with separate documents. So let's make a final, and I appreciate that, Donna. Stephanie, your hand is still up. Further comments or old hand? Stephanie's typing. Old hand. Cool. Thanks, Stephanie. All right. So let's make a call then. These 5 points that we have here from Donna, Stephanie's made some comments on them. Is there anyone who objects in principle to using these dot points as replacement for the dot points that are presently in the text? Paul has no objection, and I see no hands. I see no one objecting. All right, so staff has already made a note there. We'll keep that action item to replace the existing points with these points suggested by Donna. What that will do then is that only gives us the opening line to review. GNSO stakeholder groups and ACs, SOs, appointing members to the EPDP team, should make reasonable efforts to ensure that the composite of individual members, colon, and then we'll go on to list those dot points. I find it hard to believe that anyone would object to that opening line. It seems pretty innocuous. Any objections to that opening line? No objections. All right. So after this call, we'll go ahead and replace the dot points that Donna has suggested to follow that opening line. As I see it here, Aidan, Darcy, McKaylee, and Stephanie have made some high-level comments. McKaylee's not with us, but McKaylee's simply supporting Darcy. Stephanie, we've already got your comment considered there. So, Aidan, as you've suggested, an amendment to one of the dot points, and Darcy's just suggested a general high-level amendment. It sounds to me like we've captured both of your comments by the replaced dot points. Okay. Aidan's okay with the language from Donna. Brilliant. And Darcy agrees. So that's fabulous. Staff will clean up the document then. Donna, if we could ask you just in the quantum to come back to this, you know, at the end of the call and in view of everything you've heard, if you think that there's anything to tinker with or tweak. But otherwise, this one, I think what we can do is, thanks, Donna, appreciate that. Give this, you know, give Donna a bit of time, give staff a bit of time. We'll come back and sweep this one up. And it sounds to me like this one's in very good shape. So any further comments on this document in relation to membership criteria? No, seeing none. All right, fantastic. Let's move along in our list then. That's great work. That's one achieved. That takes us to EPDP team composition. Now, before we even get started here, this is one that's had a tremendous amount of dialogue on the list. I know we've had a number of comments. I think it's entirely possible that given that folks are in transit and everything else, that there are comments that haven't been captured. We've done the best that we can in capturing comments. If there's a comment that's missing, it's not intentional and it's not some sort of effort to undermine anyone. It's just a matter of this is a fantastically complex puzzle with a bunch of moving parts. So, and I noticed there were comments on the list just moments before our call. So I think what we need to do is, Keith, might I put you on the spot? So you held the pen, am I right in thinking, you held the pen on the initial drafting of this. Are you able to give us an impression, Keith, of where things were in your view as we left Panama, as we left the wrap-up session? Let's just get a level set on that, and then we'll move forward.
Thanks, Heather. This is Keith Drazik. I'll do my best. Recognizing this is a sensitive topic, and I sent an email to the list a couple of days ago that sort of laid out my thinking. I will refer people to that. But essentially, we discussed in Panama developing a group structure that would be manageable, efficient, and limited in its scope in terms of participation. To make sure that it was able to focus on its work. We discussed the concept of using, you know, a group of about 30 people as a target and using the principle of inclusivity to make sure that we were ensuring that interests and participation across the ICANN community to include GAC, ALAC, SAC, who had all expressed interest in this topic, that they would have the ability to participate. It's important to note that in a normal PDP, there is no limitation on participation. Anybody can participate, anybody can join. But in this case, we as a council, as a drafting team, sort of agreed on the need for something to be more limited and focused. So essentially where we came out of Panama was the idea that we would have three representatives from each SGNC, Paul and Marie both, requested that there be an opportunity for the constituency level participation in the numbers breakdown. And we, as a group, responded to that. But there's been quite a bit more discussion on the list. There's been quite a bit of pushback and concerns raised, particularly from NCSG. I think it's important to note that in the first round of this, the proposal was actually for NCUC and NPOC to each have three, but I was told that NCSG wanted to remain, counted or considered as a stakeholder group, not at the constituency level. Just an important data point there. So, look, this is still a moving target. I think there's been some constructive input on the list from Marie in particular and from others. So I think where we came out of Panama was a group of 30 participants with five liaisons and one independent chair for a total of 36 to have included GAC, ALAC, SAC, and I think we also had CCs eligible.
So, but there's been more conversation on this, and I'm just going to hand it back to the leadership team to try to take us forward at this point. Thanks.
Thanks, Keith. That's helpful. And to support the point that Keith's made, and there may be some enormous misunderstanding, I walked away from the wrap-up as well and didn't hear objections. And it might just be that there were objections made that I didn't capture. But so I think that's a helpful summary, Keith, of where we were a week ago. We have, as you've noted, had a significant amount of discussion. I have noted that the comments that have been made since, and as I understand it, the point under discussion is the number of representatives from the ISPCP, IPC, and BC. Is the number of representatives from the NCSG also in question, or is it just a matter of the three constituencies from the CSG? Okay. So the two are linked, and it's a parity point. Okay. Now, Susan and Marie have made Susan, Marie, and in fact, Philippe, but Philippe is not with us, and we have Tony Harris, have made some suggestions on the list. Susan, Marie, might I put one of you two on the spot? Is there a way forward from the BC's perspective? Marie, please, thanks.
Hi, can you hear me? This is Marie.
All good, Marie. Thanks.
Great. Sorry, it took me a while to get off mute. Firstly, thank you to everyone who's put so much work into this. It really isn't easy. And looking at Aidan's last comment in the chat, yep, the NCSG with parity in the CSG, as we've said on this, we agree. We have no problem with that whatsoever. Our concern was that the very, very, very first draft, if we can remember back that far, had one member per constituency within the CSG and two alternates for the CSG. And that, of course, is a problem because of the specificities of our three constituencies. We then thought, purely on the basis of workload, and we don't want people falling over, and we don't want people getting fired or getting shouted at by the families and spouses, that having two members each, plus an alternate in case somebody can't make a meeting, breaks their leg, whatever, would be a good idea. That's our simple basis. You know the points about consensus, Heather, and we believe this would not in any way affect consensus. All it would affect is human capability, workload, biceps to be able to pull the load. That's all. Now, if there is an issue with each of us having 2+1, so 6 members CSG, 6 members NCSG, we, from the BC, I think we'd also be fine with 1 full member and 1 alternate per constituency, so 3 members of the CSG and 3 members of the NCSG. It really is all about practicality. Thank you.
Thanks, Marie. That's very helpful, both on the specifics and the general principle. Paul.
Thanks. So this is Paul. This is, this is the lead balloon that I'm afraid that on this topic it's going to be difficult for me to sell back to the IPC. If every constituency besides the IPC, the BC, and the ISPs all have 3 members who can participate, in the complete sense that they're not alternatives, but each of the 3 constituencies within the consumer, the commercial stakeholder group, each have 2. The enormous amount of work to be done here. I think we all agree that the number of people at the table has nothing to do with consensus calling. It just has to do with work. And so, I agree with Aidan on the principle of parity. I just don't see how each of the 2 constituencies over there have three each, and we all have two each is parity. So I think it's I guess I don't understand how parity is one point of view being compromised by having fewer people to help pick up the pen and do the work. So I don't know how to get past this. I really thought we were on a good path. Tatiana had recommended beefing up the language to make it clear that the number of voices isn't how a chair would sense consensus. I don't see that that particular compromise idea was picked up in the compromise section of this document. And Tatiana said she was working on language along those lines. She may have sent that to the list, and I dismissed it because there were just dozens and dozens of emails about, you know, everything from transcripts and, you know, on. But I would much prefer that we go down the path of agreeing that the number of people at the table isn't how you count. It's just people with the ability to work. You know, going back and saying, you know, good news, we got two, and the Country Code Council got three. That's just going to be a really tough sell, especially because, you know, again, this is not about voting. It's not about how many people get, you know, get to raise their hands at consensus time. This is about the ability to work and to participate. And if you take away people's ability to work and participate in this process, then it's not an ideal process. Thank you.
It's thanks, Paul. And Tony, over to you to give the third perspective from this constituency, a stakeholder.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. Sorry, I was a little delayed joining. We would be happy with a two-member per constituency plus one alternate. In other words, the CSG would have a total of six members and three alternates. And we have no objection with the concern for parity that the NCSG has. If they want to equal the numbers, that's okay with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. That's helpful. So it seems to me that that's the final sticking point here in relation to this document. If we can put that, so there's effectively two proposals on the table. There's two things on the table. One is the existing language. The other is the proposal put forward by the BC that the RSPCP supports. If we park that for the moment and have a look at the document, is there anything else in the document? There are a number of comments in the comments and suggestions box, but I think they primarily go to numbers. And then we've got the proposed compromise, as Marie has very helpfully explained. Is there anything else other than the numbers in the three constituencies that form the CSG that's an objectionable in this text? Aidan.
Thanks, Heather. This is Aidan. So there was one suggestion that I had put in the document, which was to revert to the original text in terms of numbers of representatives from the different SOs and ACs. So in the original version, we had one member from each SOAC plus one alternate. And somehow we reached a stage where that was increased to three members. And in the Google Doc, I suggested that we revert back to one member per SOAC with the exception of the GAC, where sort of as a political compromise, I suggested that we do allow them to have three representatives. So that was one change that I had suggested. Thanks.
Thanks, Aidan. And I think I see that language in the second dot point there. Other SOs, ACs will be invited to appoint one member each, with the exception of the GAC, who may appoint three members. Does anyone have concerns about that? Before we turn to Pam, let's take that comment. Anyone have questions, comments, concerns about the draft text that you see in the second dot point there? Rafiq's asking in the chat, any reason why having CCNSO? So, Paul, just to be very clear, because I don't want to gazump Pam, and actually, Pam, let's check in with you. Is your comment on this point, or is it on a different point? different point. Okay. So let's pick up, Pam, with your indulgence. Let's pick up this point. Paul, your hand came up, so I think you're on this point.
Thanks, Heather. No problem with the GAC having three seats other than what I pointed out before, which is, you know, with GAC, ALAC, SAC, and the CCNSO each having three seats and the IPC having two, that's my concern. It's not the number of seats they have. It's just that the optics of that is going to be super hard to explain. Thanks.
Okay, Paul. Thank you. Aidan, are you on this point? So, Aidan, you're initially the one that brought up this point. We'll just circle back to you because your hand is up. So I don't hear Aidan, but my phone just made a funny noise, so I'll make sure you can hear me. So you'll have a funny noise, and you'll have heard me say funny noise. So Aidan, I think you're unmuted. Aidan, we can't get you off mute, so we're going to come back to you. Neil can hear someone typing and breathing. Aidan's going to type. All right, very good. And Aidan, we'll try and get you back on audio. Anyone else have any comments? We're going to have to park Paul's comment because it's related to the previous one. Anyone else have any concerns about one member each with the exception of the GAC from 8.3 members? And again, to the point that was discussed in the chat, because those on the audio cast wouldn't have heard it. There were some questions in the chat, primarily, let's say, kicked off by Marika about, you know, are other NACs compelled? The answer is no. They're merely invited. Marika, your hand is up.
Yeah, thanks, Heather. I just had another point of clarification that may have gone lost in the chat. Whether indeed those SOAC appointees would be counted as members or liaisons, and especially thinking from the consensus call approach, would they be factored in if there would be a consensus call, or do they serve as liaisons? I think that was as well an issue that was discussed. I know that they're currently listed as members, but I just want to make sure that that's clear so language can be referenced accordingly.
Thanks, Marika. That's a good point. And I wonder if the option then would be to say the way forward on that would be to say they're invited to appoint either, you know, a member or a liaison as they choose. It might be that if we're happy for them to be either, if we don't have a preference necessarily, that they might have some ownership of the process as well and designate whether they wish to have their person be a member or a liaison. Does anyone find that troublesome? Multiple attendees are typing, so we'll see what that comes out to be. Darcy.
Thanks, Heather. Darcy Southwell. I don't have any objections to that concept. I think, and I'm looking at the document, I'm trying to find if it's still there, but I think one of the original proposals Keith had in his draft was that for these groups where we in the past that they struggle with consensus, you know, their group structure and their internal processes make their ability to participate in groups like this and speak to consensus is difficult for them. And I think Keith originally had proposed that if they're unable to do that, that it doesn't have a negative impact on the consensus building. I know we were probably talking about that in the terms of voting more so originally, but I didn't know if we needed to include that here. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't want their inability to participate in a consensus call because of their internal processes to just be a lack of consensus, if that's even possible under the rules. Thanks.
Thanks, Darcy. I think that makes very good sense. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I put my question in the chat as well, because it's part of the, you know, drafting the call for volunteers. If we're indeed allowing them to decide to either appoint a liaison or a member, it will be important to explain what the difference between the two is. And at least what I understand for now, that the only difference would be if they're a member, they're expected to participate in consensus calls, while if they would appoint a liaison, they're not expected to do so. If that is not a correct understanding, please let me know. Again, it's for the purpose of writing the draft call for volunteers, so we can explain if that is the direction you want to go of offering them the option of appointing a member or a liaison.
Thanks, Marika. And I see Paul's agreeing with you in the chat. That would certainly be my expectation at the most fundamental level, is that the liaison's primary purpose is getting information back to whatever group it is that they come from, and not participate in that consensus call, so that, you know, to Paul's point, not having to participate in the consensus call would have some degree of corresponding, let's say, impact on the workload involved. So Paul says members have to commit to work, the liaisons can listen or work. And I think this also ties into the previous point that was made about the, and forgive me, I forget what it's called, but the statement of commitment, that members would be asked to sign up to the statement of commitment. And that I would suggest perhaps that the liaisons might not have that obligation. Tam, we haven't forgotten your point, I promise, but let's clear out this one while we're at it. Darcy.
Thanks, Heather. So I guess that sounds great. I agree with that. My only concern is that, not to pick on the GAC, but, you know, they've often said that their internal processes don't support this way of working. And I'm concerned, like, well, we don't want to be a liaison. We want to be an active contributor, but our internal procedures just don't work. So I guess I would just sort of expect some pushback there. I agree that we put that out there like that and place that expectation, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they push back and say, well, that's not the way we work, but we don't want to be a liaison. So I don't know how we deal with them in the middle when they, you know, are refusing to come up with a consensus call, you know, refusing to participate in a consensus call because their internal procedures don't work that way when, let's say, they've appointed a member. And I don't know what we do with that at that point.
Thanks, Darcy. I don't know, you know, all we can do, let's say, is the work up front to try and tee this up. And my suggestion would be, if this is the direction that we, you know, that we all agree, is that that statement of commitment, what that does is it says, as part of that statement of commitment, that you agree to participate in consensus calls and that you are willing and able to participate in consensus calls on behalf of the group that you represent. And we need to maybe then include here, to the extent that you are not able to participate in a consensus call, or to the extent that you are not able to agree to the statement of commitment in full without modification, then that suggests that you need to be a liaison. Maybe that's the way to handle it. I mean, we're not going to prevent every situation from happening down the pipe, but I think if we make it very clear what's expected of a member and someone realizes right up front that they cannot fulfill that responsibility, that at least, you know, it's an insurance policy on our part, let's say. And Donna's saying to that point she's tried to address it in a statement of participation. And yeah, Stephanie, I think to your point again, we can influence it. So Stephanie's made a comment in the chat for the purpose of the audio cast. Stephanie's made a comment in the chat about, you know, the members that other groups select, and they need to understand that they're going to have to stay along with the process. I think we can't influence or dictate who another SO or AC chooses or not chooses. What we can do, what's in our control, is that statement of participation statement of whatever we're calling it. And we have to then make it crystal clear that we take that one very seriously, and we're going to impose it on all of our own people as well, that if you can't agree to that, then you're not the right party. Now, Donna said in the chat, we may need to explain what a consensus call is. On that one, I agree, Donna, and there I think we can helpfully reference, and hopefully I'm not wrong on my numbers, it's 3.5 or 3.6 of the working group guidelines. We can refer folks to that and say, if you cannot participate in this process, or the process is laid out very, very clearly in that document. If you are unable to participate in this on behalf of the group that you represent, then you are not you're not qualified to be a member. And of course, Stephanie, you're right. We say we can only handle what we can handle. So I have Tony and Paul, and then let's clean this one out, and we'll shift over to Pam. So Tony.
Yeah, I would just add reinforce the fact that should the GAC want to be members, getting them to tie into a consensus, that could take weeks or months. So that's something which has to be carefully considered. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. That's helpful. Paul.
Thanks. Paul here. Further to Tony's comment, yeah, to get consensus from the GAC, that would require this to go through at least one public meeting cycle. And so that I don't know that that's a practical thing. Should we be thinking differently for the GAC than for the other advisory committees and sort of blurring the line between member and liaison? Because if we say you have to be able to do a consensus call for your AC, the GAC will say, well, we can't do that. And then we say, well, okay, you have to be a liaison then. And then the GAC says, you know, bad news, we're only allowed to have liaisons. We are not allowed to really participate in the EPDP, which is, I don't think, what we want to happen. So is the solution for the other ACs that they have to be able to represent their views of the AC, but the GAC members who participate can represent their personal views? And then the idea then is that they then become champions of the output here, and they go back to the GAC to try to sell it for a consensus and GAC advice later down the road. I think we may need to find a way to break out of our binary here to accommodate what the GAC really is. Thanks.
It's, thanks, Paul. And as I just put in the chat, I think that's, you know, it's a helpful comment. And I also think we need to have a better understanding of what the GAC's intentions are with its representatives. It may be that, that they are not intended to be representatives of the GAC. So I think so what I would suggest that we do is leadership work in the background to have a discussion with the GAC about this, about the difference between members and liaisons and their intentions and so on. We could try and bring the council and the GAC together, although I suspect that's going to be difficult on a call. But what I would suggest is leave it with membership. We'll explore the options on how to have that conversation with them in the manner that best works for them and for us, and we'll do that right away. So, staff, if I could ask you to capture that as an action item that we need to follow up with the GAC to further explore these issues around the difference between members and liaisons and what their expectations are. Tony, is that an old hand on this point or a new hand?
Old hand, sorry, I'll put it off.
Cool, thanks, Tony. All right, let's draw a line under that one, and we'll follow up with the GAC, because it seems to me that the GAC is the only sticking point there. It seems to me that I didn't hear objections to this idea of modifying that text to the option of appointing a member or a liaison, so we can update the text accordingly, and we will draw a line under that one for the leadership to follow up. And with that, we'll turn to a new point from Pam.
Thank you, Heather. Can you hear me?
Yes, Pam. Wonderful.
Great. I just have a quick question about the two ICANN staff liaison we have allocated or are proposing here, one from legal, one from GDB. So do we need to, are these in addition to the policy staff who usually support PDP efforts? I just try to understand that, and because I anticipate the workload is not only going to be heavy for community members who participate in this effort, but we also need to, but also heavy for policy support staff. Do we need to specify that, or do we need to make that clear? Thanks.
Thanks, Pam. Thanks, Pam. I think that's a good question. And before I turn to Marika, what I'll say is this. Let's say I actually think you're raising two points, Pam. One is about the workload, and I think that comes into resources. And as we start to nail down the resources on this, it's clear to all of us, although perhaps not quantifiable at this stage, that the impact for policy support staff is going to be, and likewise the GNSO secretariat is going to be high. That's something that we need to capture in resourcing. Now, as to these particular liaisons, remember all the comments we just made about the difference between members and liaisons. My understanding, at least in relation to GDD, is that that person in operating as a liaison would be in a position, because of the expedited nature of our work and having to build in implementation and so on, that person is better able to follow up where we are sort of live in process. And legal would be for the quick referral of matters to internal legal. But Marika can put a finer point on both of those comments. So Marika, over to you.
Thank you, Heather. This is Marika. And I think so. Apart from what has been called out here, I think it's something that staff has already been discussing internally, because, of course, in a normal PDP, there's usually more time for us to consult with our GDD colleagues, for example, on implementation-related concerns or any questions that may arise for our legal colleagues, which normally happens at the stage of the initial report. But, of course, in this compressed timeline, there may need to be more kind of direct or live consultation in that regard. So we had already anticipated that we would need to have more active engagement of colleagues from GDD as well as the legal team in this PDP. So I think it has been specifically called out here. I think from our side that there's no concern in that regard. It's something we had foreseen already in any case, whether or not they're called formal liaisons or not. And I think it was also called out in the resources section that we foresee them actively engaging where needed, of course, again, to make sure that the timeline is met and we're not in a situation by the time the initial report is published that, for example, significant concerns are raised with regards to implementation related issues or any kind of legal aspects that could otherwise have been called out at an earlier stage.
Thanks, Marika. That's helpful. Can I make a suggestion? So, Pam, you're saying thanks in the chat. That's great. In terms of this, I think one thing that I would find helpful by way of an addition to this text is we're specifically calling out here three classes of participation. There's member, there's liaison, and there's observer. Can I suggest that we pull those out as a separate point and have some definitions here at the top of this section, which defines each of those terms? And the member point can link to those who represent a group who have agreed to the commitment, statement of commitment. Liaison is, in the broad lines along, we've described it here today. And then observer, we have a specific point on observer, but I suggest that gets pulled out into this definitional section. Does anyone have any trouble with that? I think just to clarify the terms used in this section. No one's screaming. Okay. Good stuff. So let's, Steph, we can lean on you to help us make that change. I think that would be very helpful. There's also the term chair, but I don't suppose we need to define that one. And, in fact, leadership is on our list of topics for today. Are there any further comments on this? We have another, perhaps alternate is a term we need to define as well. So we have members, we have alternates, we have liaisons, and we have observers. So we'll define each of those. Are there any other points here that need to be picked up? It seems to me that the remaining point is the numbers, the precise numbers issue. And if I can think back to our previous small team, so the small team working on scope is Keith, Paul, Susan, and Stephanie. I wonder if you guys would be willing. So, Paul, you and I, you're going to have to champion this one. Are going to have to take the discussion that we've had here today back to the IPC on numbers. Could we make that something else that perhaps, to the extent that, Paul, you come back with comments from the IPC, can that get discussed in that small group as well?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay, cool. So let's do that then. Let's park the numbers because we're not going to solve that today. There's obviously instructions that have to come back. As I understand it, up to the point of that number clarification, the number agreement, then this text looks like it's in pretty good shape. We've got some amendments to make. We're going to have that definitional section. We're going to add in the business about the other SOs and ACs can appoint a member or a liaison as they prefer, and that will actually be helpful once we have those definitions in. That, to me, seems to catch things. Donna, your hand is up. Over to you.
Thanks, Heather. Donna Austin. So on the numbers, can we get some agreement on the timeline to kind of draw a line under this? Because, you know, one of the things that I think we all understand is that there's a lead time to get this working team together. So the sooner we can have resolution on the numbers, the sooner we can go forward. So it would be good to get a commitment on the time to resolve that.
Donna, thanks. It's an excellent reminder because you remember that the sort of draft timeline that we looked at in the wrap-up on Thursday in Panama City suggested that we were going to put out a call for members on Monday. Now, I don't think we're in a position to do that for a number of reasons. One is we haven't finalized the numbers, so we don't know how many we're asking for. Two is that foresaw that we had a charter that was pretty much baked that we were going to be able to do a vote on. And what I'm going to suggest that we do, it's now we've got 25 minutes left in the call. I would suggest that we spend the last 15 minutes of the call talking about next steps because I think that's going to be necessary here. So that gives us 10 more minutes on substance. Now, as to the small team and the timeline for the small team, that was so I think Stephanie made a pretty sensible suggestion in the chat about let's try and lock down the documents on Sunday and let's have the small team try and come together early next week. I don't think you have any APAC people, so you're all kind of close in time zones. So that is more workable, let's say, for the small team in terms of getting together maybe on the Monday. With that, we're going to have to push out our call for volunteers, our call for team members, until later in the week. So, Donna, to your point, I think if we were to say the small team try and come together, you know, on Monday or Tuesday, and that this comes back to the council on Wednesday, that would maybe mean we're doing a little bit of timetable on the fly here without actually looking at the timetable. But I would suggest that maybe that means we're looking at the call for volunteers later in the week. Like as soon as we come to agreement, I think we can start to wrap up the text for the call for volunteers. But I think until we have a charter, we think we can live with in principle. I wouldn't like to go asking for folks to make a commitment. Does that, let's say, take the first chunk of that, small team to come together on Monday, lock the documents Sunday, small team on Monday, and then let's maybe come back to this mid-next week. So Stephanie says that sounds reasonable. Yeah, and I agree, Stephanie. You know, Stephanie's made a comment in the chat, and I'll say it for the benefit of all those listening to us on the audio cast. This is a point that leadership made, so we you know, took to heart everything that was said in the council meeting, and we went off and did that video with the comms folks and said, look, we made brilliant progress, and to the extent that there's any concern about rush, we really don't want to rush. We want to get it right the first time, and that's going to set us up with a proper platform going ahead. So I still believe that that's what we need to be holding to here. So Stephanie said reasonable for the timeline. Anyone else, you know, objecting to lock the documents Sunday, move forward small team Monday, and then come back to this mid next week. Paul's typing, timeline makes sense. Okay, and I see no one screaming. Donna, your hand's up. Go.
Thanks, Heather. So just to be clear, what we mean by documents locked down by Sunday, does that mean the full council has had an opportunity to review the documents by Sunday, or that the small group has the documents back to the list by Sunday to give us time to review and then a decision Wednesday?
Thanks, Donna. So as I understood the comments from Stephanie and the small team, what we need to do is each one of us needs to go into these documents and review them to see if our own comments are captured here so that the small team has everything to be working with. So I think that's what I mean by lockdown, is let's make sure that the small team has everything that they need. And now, just to be very clear, the small team is working on scope, and a small team is working on numbers in composition. They're not looking at everything. We're not tasking these four souls with everything. We have done our own work in relation to, and now I've got to go back up to the list. We've done our own work, and staff will help us clean up membership criteria. And the small team will deal with the scope document and the team numbers. Yeah, they're not going to have to look at the whole document. We'll clean up the document on the side. And Keith, I take your point about cataloging all inputs by tomorrow. I just think it might mean, let's say, if instructions are needed, we might need more than just 24 hours for instructions, which is why I think maybe we just push this to the weekend. I understand that every day I realize, yeah, we're all waking up in the morning, all of us. I'm waking up in the morning and thinking we're one day closer to next May. But I think the extra 2 days just for the purposes of consensus building and selling ideas back home, I think we need that extra 2 days. Okay. Donna, I'll just circle back to you because you're the one that raised the very sensible question. Does that make sense to you? Have we amply answered your questions about timeline?
Yes, I think so.
Clear as mud, hey?
Yeah, pretty much. I'd like to see, if it's possible to have this made clear in an email after the call. I think that would be helpful for everybody, and particularly those councillors that actually aren't on this call. I think it's going to be important that they understand what the next steps are as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, Donna, because we are light on numbers here, and we have to get everyone across things, and we have to get SGs and Cs across things too. So I think all the more reason to give that extra time. Marika, over to you.
Thank you, Heather. I just wanted to ask a clarification on some of the other items. I believe most of the other items here, some comments and suggestions were made. I don't think they rise to the same level and necessarily than the conversation we've been having on composition and scope. So would the group feel comfortable if staff kind of goes ahead and goes to the master document and incorporate some of those suggested edits and changes, and maybe we can then use as well the opportunity to flag if there are any items that maybe more of an item that needs further discussions, so then we can also pull those out and either the small team or the next time this group meets, you can look at that and share any concerns. Because I said some of the other comment documents didn't receive any comments, so most likely they're fine as is, but in some of the others there were some minor edits that were suggested or some items that were flagged. And again, maybe the effort of giving everyone 48 hours may bring out other issues, but in order to move forward, maybe we can start at least by incorporating some of those edits that appear at least minor clarifications. But of course, anyone can still challenge those nevertheless.
Thanks, Marika. That makes good sense. And although we didn't do any sort of manipulation with the ordering of the documents there, I think we've gotten through let's say, the ones that had the most discussion. Paul, I'm going to turn to you. I've got to step away from the computer for 2 minutes. And so I'm going to ask staff to help manage the queue while I'm away. So over to you, Paul.
Thanks, Heather. This is a question from Marika. So for the other documents where you're taking comments out and moving them into the main charter document, what would be the process for us to continue to comment on that? Would it still be back in the specific document links that you sent so that staff will do one pass and then you'll do another pass after the lockdown date on Sunday? Thanks.
Yes, so this is Marika. So to respond to the comment, yes, from our perspective, that would be the easiest because it keeps it all in one place. So after this call, we'll send out the links again to the different sections that deal with the different topics. So as noted before, ideally, you provide your suggestions in the comments suggestion section, although some have also taken the approach of providing red lines, which, as noted before, are a bit more challenging to deal with, especially if they're opposite views on certain topics. And then, we'll take whatever has been provided and see how we can integrate that into the master charter, basically, and then also flag if there are indeed any comments that either seem to be contradictory or basically, changing what may have been original agreement so that the drafting team can specifically look at those and provide direction to staff on how to deal with those.
Marika, thanks. And Paul, thank you. I'm back, but what I'm going to do is this. I'm about to shut down the AC room, unfortunately, because I have to start the long slog at home. I will be on audio. We can manage with that, and I think we need to – Marika's already started discussing next steps, and I'm going to rely a bit here on Rafiq and Donna to help manage the queue. With that – how do we want to move things forward, and what perhaps we should helpfully look at the timeline on the screen and start to think about the timeline. Hey, Donna, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Heather. So I know we've got 15 minutes left, and I understand there, and this is in response to the email I sent about some folks were surprised about the leadership, the expression of interest we did in relation to the chair for the PDP team. There were some concerns about an assumption in there regarding two vice chairs. So I wonder if that's something we can address in the last 15 minutes, if we can get resolution on that. I think it would be helpful. And then with regard to next steps, if we don't get a chance to just confirm that now, maybe we can... Rafiq, Heather, and I can try to sort that out on the mailing list as regard to next steps. So, is that okay if we move forward with that discussion on leadership? I see Stephanie supports that.
It's yes. Heather. Donna. Makes great sense to me. Sorry to interrupt. It makes great sense to me. And may I add my comments here as I'm shutting down and walking towards the car? I apologize. I missed some of the stuff on the list that came up in relation to this. There's been no intention of obviously no intention of stuff up here on leadership's part. We did meet as a team just at the end of ICANN 62 and said the priority was to get out the call, the EOI call right away. And we tried to capture things as best we could. And staff were really just following, our suggestions. So to the extent that we've stuffed anything up here, holy cow, it wasn't intentional. It was just trying to move things along. So, Donna, I think it's a great idea. We'll follow up with the documents that remain and open the floor here to comments on the leadership. So thanks, Donna. Great.
Thanks, Heather. Rafiq, I wonder if I can turn to you or Stephanie to because I think that's where the concern came from with regard, and I think just to be clear with everybody, I think the concern here is the fact that we mentioned that once the working group is formed that the working group would select two vice chairs to assist the chair, and I think there's some concern around that issue. So Rafiq or Stephanie, could I ask one of you to speak to that initially?
Thanks, Donna. So, I think we didn't kind of agree or really discuss about if we need two vice chair or one vice chair, but I think we believe that we should have a small leadership team, as also the APDP team should be small and just having only one vice chair. So I think that putting the two vice chair in the expression of interest I think it was not needed, but it's just the language coming, if I'm not mistaken, from the annex. So it's just this maybe something we can clear out here to keep the size of the leadership small. Just the vice chair can be a backup for the chair, as we are putting a lot of in the chair in terms of neutrality, commitment, and so on.
Thanks, Rafiq. Does anybody else want to comment on this? So, Rafiq, I'm trying to understand how we clear this up. So is the suggestion that we try to retract from the, or at least take it out of the current charter text, that the reference to selecting two vice chairs, and that we leave that as an open issue for the working group itself to sort out?
Okay. So I think here for the expression of interest is, I think because we added the annex, it's something that we are still working on the charter. So I understand that is to kind of give some insight about what is expected, but I'm not sure if I have an idea. Just at least to kind of have maybe kind of caution or disclaimer that it's not set yet, and so just to avoid that people assume that what is in the annex with the announcement, it's the final version. So,
okay, thanks, Rafiq. So, in terms of the charter development, we still need to go through the annex that is attached to the leadership and make sure that we're agreed on that. Because what I'm hearing from you is that currently there is not agreement around the text that's in the annex.
So I think that's it.
Okay, so Aidan's saying in chat that there's no agreement on the annex text. And Marika has that text on the screen at the moment. And it doesn't look like Stephanie's made some comments there. We don't have, that's the only comment so far. So perhaps this is something that if I could ask people to pay attention to it, provide comments in the near term so that we can try to resolve that before today's Thursday, maybe by the end of Friday, so that that becomes something that we can sign off on. Does that make sense to folks? Yeah, and Rubens, yes, the temp spec annex is different from the annex that I'm talking about now. So if you recall the text that Paul McGrady and I worked on in wherever we just were, had an annex to it, which spoke to the role. I'm looking at Gina, so the liaison. But it had a description about the role of the chair, and I think that's what we need to clean up. Okay, so Aidan's noted some problems with that language in chat. So, Marika, I think to the extent that we can take note of those and make the adjustments, and then we'll try to put this back to the list as soon as we can. Are there any other items within the charter that are of concern to people that, you know, we've only got 6 minutes left, that they'd like to highlight or flag now as potential sticking points?
Donna, it's Heather. Can I suggest a process point, which is to say let's be super, super clear on what it is that we're doing at this point. We're working in the Google Docs that we counselors are the only ones that have access to, and we're putting comments directly into the Google Doc or into that comments and suggestions field. And I would actually suggest we work with the actual text to the extent that we can, given the point where we are. Does that make sense to everyone? So in other words, no red lines.
I see that Stephanie's agreed to that in chat, and I agree as well. Let's stay with the process that we currently have, and if I could ask people that if they do have any comments on any of the outstanding sections, so putting aside composition and scope for now, but any of the other sections, if you have comments on those, could you please provide them by the end of tomorrow, and we need to be clear whether I mean tomorrow here or tomorrow in Australia, what date that is. And then we'll try to get those wrapped up and back to the mailing list by Monday, I think. Just, Marika, I'm losing track of time, but I think that works in with the timeline we're working for the composition and scoping team. And I know that Marika's doing about three things at once at the moment. So nobody has raised their hand or put anything in chat to say that, there's any other sticking points or concerns that they have with the remainder of the charter. So I think, if people could take the time to review today or tomorrow, get those, any comments that you have included in the Google Doc, and then we'll review, leadership team will review with staff, see if we can, finalise those last bits and then have, and then try to have that wrapped up and back to the mailing list by Monday. Does that make sense to everybody? And can I remind people that we do have a mailing list set up for this? So please, any comments that you have, can you post those directly to the EPDP DT mailing list rather than just send them to Marika or to the council list? It's the EPDP DT mailing list that we're dealing with.
Donna, it's Heather. I very much appreciate. I'm super grateful to you for carrying us through. And you say there's no objections, there's no hands to, there's no further points that anyone wants to raise.
Correct, Heather.
Cool. Can I suggest then, with our 2 minutes remaining, we have a procedural point that's important that we need to deal with. So you remember our discussion in Panama City about the bylaws and what it takes to call an email vote. And when we call an email vote, we have a 7-day notice period, and we have to be confident, let's say the chair has to be confident on discussing with councillors that we are going to be in a position to vote on that 7 days. And I personally don't feel that we're in that position. If I'm misunderstanding This is an opportunity to correct me. I have a feeling, given that the email vote would have put us to the 13th, and we have a council meeting on the 19th, I have a feeling we're now shifting towards the 19th. But this is an opportunity for folks to discuss, just to make sure, you know, I'm here to capture the collective will. So if I've misunderstood, please, this is an opportunity to say so.
Paul, I see your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Donna. So, Heather, just because you can't see the comments that Stephanie and Rubens are both indicating that more time than 7 days will be needed, I tend to think so as well, just because, you know, I expect that some of the IPC comments on scope will not be universally beloved by all. So I do think we are shifting away from an unusual vote and back towards taking this up for a vote on the next formal council call. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. That's very helpful. So what I would suggest then that we need to do as well is that Donna, Rafiq, and I need to sit down and have a look at that timeline and see what the impacts are on the draft timeline that we put together for the wrap-up in Panama. And I think, you know, that would be something that we turn around as well, because it will have impacts on the call for volunteers and a few other things. So we'll put that on our immediate to-do list. You know, let's make the documents our priority, and then we'll come back to the timeline. So I appreciate that. Donna, does that make sense to you both?
Makes sense to me, Heather.
Yes, okay.
Great. Excellent. We're bang on time, everyone. Again, made very good progress, and we'll continue to communicate to Org and the comms team that we're making very good progress. We'll follow up on all of these action items that we've gotten to today. Staff have worked incredibly hard to try and capture Herd the Cats over the last week, in addition to flying back home from Panama and all of this, and we've all had travels home. So, you know, fantastic effort over some challenging circumstances, and we just continue to plug away. So thanks very much to our alternates as well. We've got Tony Harris on the phone, you know, folks who've joined us from holidays and whatnot. So thank you very much to everyone for your time today. We shall, to be continued, we'll follow up with all the action items and keep working. So thanks very much, everyone. This ends our call today, and to be continued. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for joining today's call. This concludes the call. Operator, you may now stop the recording. Have a great remainder of your day.